Orest Sosnivka. I'm 28 years old. Today is June 22nd, 2021. My location is Chicago, Illinois. The name of my interview partner is Lida Vera Nedilsky, and my relationship to her is we are longtime friends.
I'm Lida Vera Nedilska. I'm 51 years old. Today is June 22nd, 2021. I'm actually in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, doing this interview with Orest Sosnivka. And actually, I would say I'm an admirer of Orest's because ever since I met him, I felt like this is an incredible personality, a person with so much creativity and energy. I have to watch him. I have to see where he ends up. So I'm very grateful for this chance to speak with Orest in a project that is bringing me in contact with many people from Ukrainian village coming out of COVID-19. And Orest, I want to underscore that your name is also an attraction to me. I named my son Orest as well. And I don't know how many people are familiar with the Greek mythology, that your name Orest in Ukrainian comes from the Greek Orestes.
Yes.
Who was Orestes? Do you know?
I remember reading. So, well, there's when I was, especially when I went to Greece, was the first time that I was in an environment where people knew my name, because in the United States, nobody, always when I introduce myself, I have to say my name is like Forrest without the F, because people can't. But when I was in Italy and Greece, I heard a lot of Orestes. And when I was reading about it, I know Orestes was a, I don't know if he was a demigod or a Greek god. He was like a brother of another goddess, Electra, but I don't remember exactly the god of what. But I remember reading that the name Orestes translates to mountain dweller, or someone who dwells or stays in the mountains. So I always remember that. But I don't remember the exact god, what he was about.
Can I tell you why that name is, on the one hand, appropriate to you, and then just doesn't do you justice?
Tell me.
So Orestes is the son of Clytemnestra and King Agamemnon.
And oh, I remember King Agamemnon.
Yeah. King Agamemnon went to fight to bring back his sister-in-law, Helen.
That's right.
From Troy.
That's right.
And yeah. Orestes was too young to go with him, so he stayed behind.
Mm-hmm.
And in that respect, I think that Orestes is a really neat name to describe your situation as someone who was left behind because he was too young to travel for a while. And yet now at this stage of your life, I think you're more like Odysseus.
You know, actually, I love that book.
Yeah.
Homer's Odyssey. Yeah, it's a good. Exactly. It's one of my favorite, actually.
So you were left behind. You were born in Ukraine. Can you tell us a little bit about that and how you came to be in Chicago in Ukrainian village, but that never kept you tied to one place?
Well, yeah, so all of us were born in Ukraine except for my siblings. And like, well, there's a lot that plays into it, but long story short, my father was a champion of Ukraine in the Soviet Union as a lightweight boxer. And I was born right after the Soviet Union collapsed. So Ukraine was kind of in turmoil. The currency dropped. I mean, it was hard as it was during the Soviet Union, but right after I was born, it was pretty tough. We were fortunate though, because it's kind of weird to say, but at the time, the only people that really kind of made it were people that were dirty or people that were athletes. And then you can find sometimes in between, but it's very, very difficult to make an honest living, like a comfortable living. So my father was an athlete, and you know, our source of income was because he traveled throughout Europe fighting. I mean, he literally and metaphorically had to, more metaphorically, had to fight his way out. So then an opportunity came where the entire Ukrainian team came to the United States to compete. We actually have friends that one of them is an Olympic gold medalist. He's a good friend of ours. There are a lot of them are here actually in Chicago. And he came here and decided to stay because this was, he was already 28 years old, and just the quality of life in Ukraine, it's just, it's night and day compared to here. So he ended up staying. A year later, my mom came, and then 4 years later after my mom, I came. So I didn't see my father like 5 years, and then I didn't see my mother for 4 years. So did I answer your question, or was there more to it? Or how did I? Ah, and why am I traveling? Was that right, the follow-up?
So you ended up in Chicago and Ukrainian village because yes. of the steps your parents took.
Yes, yes, yes.
And you came as a child under 10 years of age. You were what, yeah. seven or five?
Seven and a half.
Yeah. And what was that like? Can you tell us that part? I mean, what did you think of Ukrainian village? What did you think of life in the United States? It wasn't a choice you made to come.
I didn't like it at first. I didn't like it because, you know, if you asked me that question when I was eight, my answer might have been different. But, you know, now I'm applying my adult perspective on what I think I felt at the time. So, you know, when you're 8 years old, you're not thinking about these deeper philosophical questions. You're just rolling with the punches, and anything that happens, you expect it to be right. But yeah, I didn't really like it because I was, you know, I came, you know, you come into Ukrainian village, you expect Ukrainians to, these are like your people, right? You're supposed to be taken in and, you know, like taken care of in a way, right? But when I, like the other kids, you know, I had a very hard accent. I actually didn't speak English at all. I only knew like the alphabet, you know, a few words. So I was learning English first, second grade. And I was just kind of singled out a lot of times. I wouldn't say bullied because my personality was very, it was different. Like, you know, you're born in Ukraine at 8 years old, you see and learn a lot more than 8 years old here, especially today. So I came from Ukraine and I'm in, you know, second grade, and, you know, there's children making your mama jokes. And that's like, what is that? You know, like I was already in a fighting, you know. So it was tough. It was really tough. I didn't understand this until way into my adult life that I had like severe culture shock for a long time. Because I did not understand the pop culture. I did not understand the little motifs, the jokes, the metaphors, the slang, any of that. And a lot of times, because I didn't fit in like that, I was the kind of the butt of the joke, or the, just people used me, you know, at their own expense, or at my own expense, for them, you know, to kind of, I guess, raise your social status, if that makes sense. And yeah, I swore to myself that that would never, ever, ever happen again. So here I am.
What did you do to change that situation? Because I don't think of you as someone to laugh at, as I said.
Well, because I demand respect. And I don't mean that in an aggressive way. I mean that I've taken a lot of time working on myself, in a sense of like looking at my behavioral flaws and benefits, or I don't know, the opposite of flaw, kind of like analytically, and, you know, just seeing where am I weaker. Like, I'm actually very comfortable talking in large groups of people, large groups of audiences or whatever, because I've been a, you know, performer for many years. But there was a time where I didn't feel comfortable maybe doing like a speech in front of a classroom. So that level of uncomfort made, it was, I don't know if it's my ego or what it is, but I would just forcefully put myself in situations where I'm extremely uncomfortable to kind of overcome this, you know, this fear of, you know, people judging me. And then eventually you kind of get comfortable with being uncomfortable and you realize that, you know, wait a minute, it's not that bad. It's usually like, usually everyone in the room is thinking and feeling the same thing. You know, we just kind of, we create this like, this like narrative that everyone's looking at you and everyone is, you know, like thinking something stupid you said or something ridiculous you did. But that's nonsense. Every person has some sort of insecurity and we're just all pretending, you know. We're all pretending to be something else. So I just, yeah, you kind of stop. You let it go and learn to love yourself first. And
you mentioned performance.
Yeah.
My understanding of your history includes your performing on many stages, on an actual dance stage, on a soccer field, in a circus, yeah, on the back of a horse. Right. So these are not normal performances. These are often pretty dramatic performances. Can you say what that has meant in your life before we talk about the broader stage? Because again, you're not someone who sits, you're someone who's always in motion. So yeah, tell us about those performances that you've been involved in and what they've meant to you, Aris.
I don't know, it's, I don't really know. I mean, I feel like sooner or later, just my personality, I would have been, I feel like I was put on this planet to entertain. And I think it would be a crime to neglect myself away from that. I feel very comfortable at I like making people laugh. I like working with children. I like seeing like a positive reaction from them. That's now as an adult, but before I was always just kind of, I don't know, just in situations where I'm entertaining one way or another. So when I was little, when I was maybe like, I don't know, 10, 11, 12, my mother signed me up to Ukrainian dance because I live in Ukrainian village. So it was like kind of, you know, to keep the history and the culture. And she didn't do it because she thought I was going to be a performer. She just did it because of the Ukrainian aspect of it. So I did that. And then I started acting shortly afterwards. Then we have family friends that are they're from Kazakhstan, but half of them are Russian because a lot of Russians immigrated to Kazakhstan, you know, like in the mid 70s, 80s. So they do these tricks. It's called Kazakh riding. And it's not just people from Kazakhstan. There's Ukrainian Kazakh riders, there's Russian Kazakh riders. And I just thought when they were up there doing their, because they're close family friends, when I would see them, it's just like the way that people looked at them, it was like, I was like, wow, okay. That's the kind of reaction I've never seen. So I just had to do it myself. Plus, I think that when I was younger, like, I think I had this, it's not a superiority complex. I don't know how to say it. It's like, I always felt that I had to prove something to someone. I always had to, like, I felt like if I did this, and actually I loved doing it, every second of it. I still do it actually, and it's still something that I really enjoy. But I, at the time, you know, 10, 12 years ago, I think the reasons for me doing it were not as good as they are now. I was doing it to prove that I'm, you know, I'm better or I'm confident and I don't know. I think that has a lot to play in with when I came here with all the nonsense I dealt with specifically in the Ukrainian community. So when I got older and I started to kind of build in, I felt like I needed to do this really cool thing. And then, yeah, you just love it. I mean, you're working with horses. You're working with really cool people. Performers are some of the most fun people to be around with, by the way, because they're always doing something cool. Like, they're just really, really cool people. And very, very art, like, creative. So, yeah, I love it.
And that's taken you where? where have you gone as part of this experience?
Well, I've traveled throughout all the states as a circus, what's it called? As a circus performer. I didn't perform in Europe, but I've traveled all of the states. And it's cool because you really get, like, even you go to, you know, like south of Indiana, it's a different culture than it is in Chicago. So you're just meeting just different people all the time. And it's cool because there's like a sense of like rawness to it where you're never bored. And even if you meet someone that you don't like, it's still like it's never boring. And I think that's the worst, if it's boring. So you're never bored. And I like that. It's always like you don't know what you're going to get.
And do you continue to have friends among those people you've traveled with?
Yeah. Yeah. One of them actually is he's been like a brother. I met him actually it's a funny story. When I just came to the United States, that same summer, that same summer, my mother took me to Wisconsin for camp. In Baraboo, Wisconsin, there's a Ukrainian camp there. There are campgrounds there that they have like camps for kids for a week, for 2 weeks. And nearby was Circus World Museum. I'm sure you know it, right?
Definitely. Yeah.
And my mom took me there. She took me there like, I think it was, I think like the, well, it's called Molodshi Tabir, meaning like younger camp, where you can translate it to younger camp, was over. And my mom, as a treat, took me to Circus World Museum. And my mom and I were speaking Russian. And this little girl heard us. And she, this is like Baraboo, Wisconsin. Like, there's no one speaking Russian there, you know? So she heard it, this girl from Kazakhstan. And she's like, oh, my God, you guys speak Russian. That's, you know, you have to meet, you know, my mom or the whatever. So we went backstage and we met this entire, you know, group of performers, these acrobats. And we just became really good friends with them and have been friends with them since then for the last, you know, this actually, we just passed 20 years. And one of them, he was like, kind of, I just really looked up to him, just his demeanor, the way he behaved. How the girls really liked him. I was paid attention to that too. So he's 10 years older than me. And, you know, now I'm 28. I met him, I was 8, he was 18. Now I'm 28 and he has a 6.5-year-old son. And my mother is his son's godmother. So it's like, it kind of, again, comes full circle. And it's funny because I look at his son and I'm like, God damn, this is like it's like, you know the saying, like, the student becomes the teacher. It's kind of like that, you know. When you look down and you're like, oof.
And you've literally become a teacher.
Yeah, literally.
Can you tell us more about that? I mean, what it is that you're doing? Because again, there are strange ways that I look at you and your life and the lives of your siblings, and I think, wow, we're sort of moving on parallel tracks. This is someone I can relate to, even though we're not in the same generation.
Yeah.
There's so much that I see in you that I remember in myself.
Actually, I feel that too. I've always... really enjoyed our conversations. But, well, I was a dance teacher. I work at camp. I teach trick riding on horses. And then I started teaching ESL like 2 years ago. And I don't know, just like, I don't know why I was always, I never made like a conscious decision in my brain, like, I want to be a teacher. A matter of fact, I didn't want to be a teacher. When I was growing up, I was, in my mind, I was going to be a professional soccer player. That was my you know. And I had very good prospects, but sadly, I didn't have all my paperwork for, 16 years. 16 years I couldn't do any, 16 years I couldn't do anything. So it was, it just sucked. You know, I couldn't play top, college. I couldn't, I was scouted to different universities. Like, I had to pass that up. I went to LA as I was 15, and one of the head Disney Channel agents, he flew me out there. This was right, my father, he just had a heart attack. So we had very little money. My mom used the last of it, to fly me there, because my agent in Chicago was like, you got to go there. Like, if, we don't know anything about this, by the way. This was, my mom didn't know how this works. I don't know how this works. But our agent here and people in that industry said, don't miss this opportunity. You got to go. And I went there. And again, one of the agents from Disney Channel, he's like, maybe you know some of these names, like Selena Gomez or the High School Musical cast, whatever. Yeah, he was representing all of them. And they flew me out there and they offered me a contract. They wanted to sign me to their group, but I couldn't because sometimes life has a different plan for you, or sometimes God has a different plan for you. So, that for a long time really kind of devastated me. And I just stopped trying, because what's the point, right? What's the point of trying if you can't even play the game? You're just excluded,
Because you didn't have the papers, meaning
the correct papers. Yeah. So I let that resonate into my, kind of adulthood, where I kind of had a resent towards like the system, and I just quit trying. And that's naive. It's foolish for me. I'm happy that I got out of that, because, other people's actions towards you, it's not your fault. And just like in a casino, if you're dealt a bad hand, it's not your fault. But how you react to your environment, that's your fault. And it sucks to sometimes it's very hard for people to hear that, but it is. And the moment you stop worrying about everybody else and you take full ownership of yourself, what can I do different? Then you start to see usually a positive change. So I'll make it full circle with the why I became a teacher. Does it suck? Of course. But it's easy to say, I could have been this, and that, because I don't know.
Otis, let me ask you a quick clarification. Do you relate to the concept of DACA? Does that describe what it is that you would want to have for yourself? Because you're a child who came here because of the actions of your parents.
Right now or back then?
Well, now the concept exists. Does it apply?
DACA is the
deferred action on child arrivals, meaning that you came without an official status as a child. Does that apply to you? Does that protect you? Does that?
I'm an American citizen. I didn't need that. Actually, I was going a different route. We were thinking of that, but we spoke with some immigration lawyers and they advised us not to. And I'm happy I didn't, because I feel the people that did do it, depending on the president, it always seems like they're being brought up and they just don't let them go. Like, I don't want to swear or anything like that, but am I allowed to swear, by the way, or no? Is this because I use it as a form of expression, and I don't think there's a like unethical reason for it, but if we need to be professional, I can. It's fucked up. I don't know. It's like that, these are just, let them live, but fortunately we had good, we were given some good advice, and I took the longer route, but I don't have to worry about that. But did I want it as a teenager or something? God, I had just so many opportunities I had to, and for so long, I just, you just like, you're trapped. You're just, you're really just trapped. You can't do anything. So
how, apart from actually going through the process of securing your citizenship, which was a tremendous accomplishment, not just a relief, but an accomplishment for you, how else have you dealt with that feeling of being trapped? Because especially coming out of COVID, I think more people can relate to that feeling in their lives and how you felt obstructed for so long. You know, how have you managed that as a way to guide others through?
Look, I'm, you know, I really don't go out of my way telling people how to, there's many things I really don't like to do. I don't like to blame. I don't like to have right or wrong arguments. The only conversation I'm willing to have with someone is if it's in regards to solutions, not complaining, not whining, because my entire kind of belief system resonates about this idea of ownership. And it's like the saying goes with money, but you can apply this with anything. It's not your fault if you're born poor, but it's your fault if you die poor. And you can apply that to anything. You just take away the poor part and you can imply anything you want. It's not your fault if you're born into unhappy situations or an unhappy and toxic environment, but it's your fault if you keep letting that manifest and you're cultivating it. So when you start taking full ownership of yourself and seeing what is it that's making me unhappy, and you start to work on that slowly but surely, you're not going to feel trapped anymore. I think so, but you know, everyone is different. But even if my notion of how to overcome this is the correct one, I'm not out there preaching it, because change has to come from within. So if someone, my friends and I, actually, we have a really healthy habit of always just asking each other advice, especially if the topic we're talking about is mixed with emotion. You know, I can have the best advice for someone else, but if I'm like in a place where like my emotions are tied, I'll ask my friends who have similar value and belief systems as me, be like, hey, can you like analyze this from your perspective? Like, am I in the right, you know, vicinity, or am I in the right track? And they'll confirm, like, yeah, or they'll say, hey, actually, I think you're being a little over dramatic. And it's good to have that. So I can't really give you one right answer. I don't think it's like a one behavioral modification. I think it's just a different evaluation of life, of what it takes to be happy and how to find that happiness, you know?
So let me ask it differently. You're a person who moves. When COVID lockdown happened and we couldn't move anymore, right?
I did.
How did you manage? What did you do?
Truthfully speaking, I was very lucky in that situation, because when COVID happened, actually, give me just 1 second. My dog just opened the door and they're going to get noisy. Just 30 seconds. One moment. Okay, here I am. So when COVID happened, I was living in Berlin, Germany. I was there for almost, in like a 3-year time frame, I was there like 2 years. First year going back and forth, the second year I was just there. And it actually, Germany handled it very well. Most neighboring European states did. Like, Italy had it really bad. Where is it? What country is the red light district? Oh my gosh, I'm...
Netherlands.
No, not Netherlands. There's another one. Come on. No, I'm thinking Hungary, but it's going to kill me now.
Uh-oh, especially a red light district as your marker.
No, I just remember that because people associate this country with the red light district and the fact that marijuana there is legal.
Where most the Netherlands, are. Holland. Amsterdam.
Amsterdam. There you go. Amsterdam. Okay. So Amsterdam and Italy had it really bad, but like Hungary didn't. Spain, where I went to the islands, wasn't. Malta was good. So when it happened, I was, it was like people didn't really, Berlin life didn't really change for the first month. Then we started to get like a, not really, not a lockdown, but it was like the bars are closed, the clubs are closed, but all the neighboring European countries were open. So I actually never buy tickets round trip anymore. I haven't for the last 3 years. I only buy them one way. So my girlfriend and I were both getting an MBA. We just, you know, it was summertime. It was like June, end of May, June. We were like, you know, let's just, the money that we're going to spend on rent here, we can use that to, you know, it's very cheap and the prices drop because of, you know, because of COVID. And actually, I don't want to brag because COVID really affected so many people in such a negative way. In some situations, very, very traumatically. But it just, I was lucky enough to be in a situation where I could kind of take advantage of the, you say, the price drop and, you know, like locations being open. So yeah, I did that. I was traveling, I don't know, like 10 countries. And yeah, it was nice. I can't complain. It was really nice. I've seen some beautiful sights.
And how did the technology fit into your life under COVID? Because that's a constant. You're very oriented toward connecting through Skype, especially. Is that something that allowed you to stay up on people's situations? Were you working remotely? What was that like?
Well, actually, I work. So I'm an ESL teacher online. And most of my students, they're from China, so they're 13 hours ahead of Chicago, but 5-6 hours ahead of whatever country I'm in Europe. So there, it's like, it works out perfectly because they're taking their online classes either before or after school, mostly after school, and I'm waking up around the same time they're getting out of school, so it became kind of like a full-time job where I would still travel but have my computer with me, work in the morning until 12 or 1, and then, you know, do everything, you know. So technology is a very, very vital, it's like a key factor in my life. Not to mention it if it wasn't for technology the way it is, I wouldn't be able to connect with so many people because I have so many friends all over the world that we met somehow, sometimes on accident, sometimes through performing, sometimes to school, but we've all kept in each other, touching each other's lives. So, you know, it's nice going to a new place and you know that someone's there. And because of things like social media, this is the one way social media is really good. People can stay up to date with what's happening in your life. So even I live in Istanbul now, I moved to Turkey. And there's a guy that I went to college with here in Chicago, and we used to party together all the time. And I honestly didn't even know he was from Turkey, but I just put in that I'm moving, like, hey, or I put a picture next to this beautiful mosque. Like they have some of the most beautiful, I mean, oh my goodness, just like this, just grandesque mosque. And I put it on my social media and he was like, hey, what the hell, man? Are you in Istanbul? Like, you know, I live here. Like, so yeah, we were able to be link up like that. And that's pretty cool. So technology is a very important piece of, it fits directly with my life.
And do you connect to Ukraine through the technology or physically? Yeah. Because you're also locating yourself in Europe and across the Black Sea, in Turkey. Do you feel confident going to Ukraine right now, or are you largely connected through social media?
Both. Well, with my grandparents, there's apps like WhatsApp, Viber. They use Viber in Ukraine. So, no, I'm always talking to them. And then as soon as I got my passport, I don't think, like, every 3 months, the latest, I was going there for like a month or something like that. This is the longest I haven't been there because of the pandemic. Although it's weird, like their borders were closed, but like every Ukrainian I know was like, had no problem flying in there. So I'm planning on going this summer, but I'm first relocating to Istanbul My girlfriend's looking for like for a nice place for us there. And it's I have a Rottweiler and I'm taking him with me, so it's like this whole it's a process, but yeah, I'll definitely be seeing them. They have a farm actually like 5 hours away from Lviv. And I think we talked about this, Lida. I believe we did. And those that community there just loves me. And me being the egomaniac that I am, you know, it works both ways. You know, I'm like, I can entertain them and I can get the attention that for some reason I like so much. So yeah, I go there all the time. And as soon as I had the chance, as soon as I had the ability to, it's yeah, always.
I just want to point a couple of things out. One is that your grandparents raised you while your parents were in Chicago. Right. And so that debt that you have to them is something that you have expressed to me, and the degree to which you teach English and work with young people in an area that's really isolated and limited, right? As so many rural areas are in the world today. I think that's important to understand. The other is, it's been 20 years, you know, since they took care of you. And like, again, Odysseus, he was gone for 20 years.
That's right. 10 years in the war, and then, 10 years back. That's right.
Yeah. So Odysseus, you're returning to Ukraine. You're returning to this rural place of people who miss you and have, you know, struggled in your absence. Is there anything that you want to bring them that's special at this point in their lives?
Well, my grandparents, like, I took him to like, because, you know, going on vacation in Ukraine, it's not like going on vacation in America where you can, you know, go to Cancun or, you know, get a week resort. It's not like that. I mean, their vacation is like going camping or something, because it's the cheapest option. So, which, by the way, I love. Like, my grandfather was a hunter, and it's like, it's my element, you know. It's as soon as I'm anywhere where there's nature, like, all my shoes and everything come off. Like, I mean, not everything, but my shoes and socks. Like, I'm don't, you know, it's my phone isn't like, I don't even want to, you know, I'm just doing something with either I'm fishing or building or something. So I love that. But I also know that, you know, they've reached a certain age that they, you know, like, I should be able to do something different for them. So I took them to Berlin for a week. Like, it was really cool. Like, I took them both shopping first, because my grandma likes the shopping, but, you know, she can't financially allow herself some things. But my grandfather's, he doesn't really, you know, whatever. So then I took him and I was like, all right, grandpa, relax. Let me help you get an outfit. And then once he started trying things on himself, he was like, you know, he's like, oh, I don't need anything. I can just go like this. I'm like, no, we're going to get you some nice jeans, and we're going to, you know, like, it's about time. And when he started trying it on, he's like, actually, let me try the blue one. Let me look how the blue one looks. And then when we came to Berlin, because we went shopping in Ukraine, we would go to these stores that they don't have in Ukraine. He would just go by himself. And he's like, you know, hey, what do you think of this one? How do you think this looks? Because once he's seen it on himself, you know, we got him a nice haircut, you know, lined him up and everything. And once he saw what he could look like, then he was, you know, it was so funny. He like, you know, he's 70 years old, he's 75, but his face like lit up, you know. So that's pretty cool. So yeah, I made an oath that like when I come back to Ukraine, I'm going to take them somewhere. So I did this whole kind of like shopping sprees, and I don't know, like right in the center of Berlin, right near Zurlukische Garden. It's like this really kind of wealthier area. Well, I mean, that day we're not in a, like staying in a like expensive hotel, but still, for them to see something else different like that, it was really, actually, I'll send you pictures. It was really cool.
I'd love to see them. Artist, I just want to, again, point out one thing. You're 28 years old. Your father was 28 when he made the move.
Yeah.
To leave Ukraine.
Yeah, 27.
And again, you have this position now that you created for yourself, where you can make things happen for others. And yeah. I'm, again, an admirer of that.
Thank you.
And I'm so grateful that we had this conversation.
Ditto.
I'm always really a pleasure. Glad that people will be able to understand a lot more about Ukraine and Ukrainian villagers, especially those who keep flying. They never stop flying. So thank you for this.
Thank you. I mean, it was really a pleasure. Yeah, it was really nice. I'm happy to. I haven't talked to you in a while, so it was nice to. You haven't aged a day, by the way. You always, every time I look at you, you look the same.
Well, that's very kind. And again, I'm an admirer, and I'm so grateful for knowing you. So thank you.
Ditto.